Well, Hare Krishna, everyone. Good morning and happy Ram Navami. Today is, as Prabhuji says, a special, special day. Not just special, but special, special. And the fact that this is a special class is because Lord Rama is very, very special. Actually, the incarnation of Rama is one of the many, many incarnations coming from the Supreme Lord. In the Brahma Samhita, we find the verse spoken by Lord Brahma, Rama di Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishtan Nana Avatara Akarod Bhuvane Shukintu, that there are many, many incarnations, beginning with Ram. Ram comes in a stream of incarnations. So why is Ram special? Ram is so special, actually, that Lord Rama's story is so popular that even though the events described in the story of Rama, Rama's journey, the Ramayana or Ramayana, that even in India today, when a TV series was made of the Ramayana, it was enough to bring the country to a standstill. So Lord Rama and his story of Sita and his brothers and his father, his mother and stepmothers, the evil King Ravan, Hanuman, his able assistant, and everything that happened to him has been so much appreciated over many thousands of years that the stories have permeated the world. All the way through India, there is no one that does not know the name of Ram. There's no one that doesn't worship Lord Ram. Practically speaking, you may even find some people who do not worship Krishna, but they worship Ram. I wonder why that is. And then if you go outside India through Myanmar into Thailand, we find that the position of a king was so much identified with the position of the Supreme Lord in his Rama avatar, that the kings of Thailand were customarily referred to as Rama, Rama the fifth, Rama the seventh, like that. If you go very just over the border, then you go to Cambodia. And of course, the biggest temple in the world is in Angkor Wat. And there on the walls of this temple, you'll find the Ramayana story. That's a long way from India. If you go to Afghanistan, the other direction, you will find Lord Ram. Even in Iran, in Persia, you will find the story. Even in the Horn of Africa, in Ethiopia, we find a version of the story. The story is a very good story. It's the best of all stories because the director, the writer of the story is none other than God himself. Who better than God to write a story? And who better than God to direct his incarnation when he comes to this world? Even Hollywood has stolen the story of Lord Ram. When the first Star Wars movie came out, I think it was 1977, the devotees were saying, hey, they've stolen our story. Why? Because there's an evil person living on an island. The Ramayana has him in the ocean, but Star Wars has him in space. He's Ravan, or he's Darth Vader. Then we have a young prince, Luke Skywalker. The princess Sita, /Leia, is stolen. And he has to go to the forest to find all the monkey creatures to help him to defeat the evil king. So later on, about a year later, the director of that original Star Wars movie, he says, it's true. I got it from the Ramayana. So the Ramayana is the best of all stories. It makes the best book, the best TV series, the best film, because God is the writer, the creator, and the scriptwriter, the director. The Ramayana is 24,000 verses. The whole book is 24,000 verses. It was written by Valmiki, a great sage, and he carefully inscribed each of those 24,000 verses, each section is mystically inscribed with a syllable from the Gayatri Mantra. But really, the story of Lord Rama, which spans 11,000 years, the Ramayana really only tells us about 14 years, and a little bit before and a little bit after. We don't get too much of the story, because this is the crux. The crux of a person's life can be told in a particular story. And in the Ramayana, we find God, yes, incarnation of God, but we find a different God than Krishna. Because although Krishna, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, when he comes in different forms, he comes to perform different functions. So when he comes as Krishna, his function is different. He's showing the absolute realm of the spiritual world. He's attracting us to his original form, his original associates, and everything that takes place there. And he displays leelas, which are, or pastimes, activities, which are fully transcendental. But because we live in a world which is the whirlpool of Maya, where the Supreme Being's activities is reflected upside down in this world in which we live. So sometimes our grasp of our activities and his activities is an upside down reflection. So Krishna is known as Purushottam, the Supreme Person, but he's particularly known as Leela Purushottam. He comes to perform Leela. So when Rama comes, he's known as Mariyad Purushottam. Mariyad, the word Mariyad means it's the border, the boundary line between two properties. This is mine, that's yours. And the boundary line is the Mariyad. It can be a fence or a boundary wall. It says that this is mine and this is yours. So why should Krishna be concerned? Well, because although everything belongs to Krishna, only those who are pure in heart will believe that and practice it. And everybody else will assume proprietorship of something, either because they've paid for it, they've worked for it. Usually I've done the work, I've got the money, I pay for something, it's mine. I am the possessor of that object, I am the possessor of that field. And therefore ordinary people who are fruitive will label the world, which belongs to Krishna, they will label the world according to me and mine and you and yours. So in order to establish good behavior within the world, Dharma also has to concern itself with legislating who gets to say who owns what. And so the incarnation for establishing social justice, what's right and wrong, for establishing peace in the world, which is established through social justice, everybody knowing what belongs to me and what belongs to you, and not infringing the rights of anybody else in the process. This has to be done by Mariyad. So Mariyad Purushottam is the incarnation of God who comes to establish that. Now, you may say that doesn't sound very boring. It sounds like a judge or someone. It sounds like, someone who's come to settle disputes. And how his life can be boring. Well, the appearance of Lord Rama is very interesting because in his own life, he is portraying the position of someone whose rights were severely inflicted. He was about to be crowned and his coronation was stripped away from him. He was about to enjoy a happy life in the forest, and his wife was stripped away from him. He was about to win a battle, and his brother was stripped away from him, almost. So in these cases, we see Lord Rama settling disputes. And that is why Rama is very beloved by everyone who has a dispute in their life. And Rama is called upon because he's the person who demonstrated the best possible way of settling disputes, which normally involved sacrifice in some part. So Ramayana is like that. So Rama is a little more easy to understand than Krishna, because Krishna comes and Krishna establishes his supremacy. Not how to equally apportion everything in this world all the time, but Krishna comes to establish that I am not only the owner of everything in this world, but I am everything in this world. And I do not have to worry so much about establishing human dharma, but I establish a transcendental dharma. Therefore, we see that Krishna steals butter. Krishna stole butter as a baby. His dominion over everything began early on. Whose butter was it? Was it Krishna's butter? No, it was his neighbor's butter, but he stole it. And he danced with other men. There was young maidens bathing in the water. He stole their clothes. Were they Krishna's clothes? Well, yes, everything belongs to Krishna. But it does not establish dharma, because someone can look at Krishna and they can say, look, he stole butter. He stole clothing. And eventually he stole the wives of others by dancing with them in the middle of the night. But when Krishna comes to reveal his Rasa Leela, or the eternal circle dance, he's showing his supremacy. When Rama comes as Mariya Purushottam, he's displaying the power of God to establish law and order within the world so that everybody can be peaceful. So in this way, Rama is more of the God that the Abrahamic conception would understand. When the first Christians went to India, they said, who is this Krishna? Krishna doesn't seem to be moral. He doesn't seem to be virtuous. How can he possibly be God? Because God comes to establish rules for human beings. But little did they know, the Vedic aphorism, dharmam tu shakshat bhagavat pranitam, that all dharma comes from God. All dharma comes from God. But not that you understand every time. If God was only captured by your understanding the first time round, what sort of God would he be? So do not try to understand Krishna the first time round, my dear ministers of religion. you may be unsuccessful. So the story is an exciting story. We'll get onto the story in a minute. But it's also what is known as a Sharanagati Shastra. The Ramayana is a Sharanagati Shastra. Shastra means the holy book, holy text, that which is received. But Sharanagati means the principle of surrender. And this principle of surrender is such an important thing, because we find it echoed again and again and again. We find Lord Brahma surrenders to Lord Vishnu. We find the demigods surrender to Lord Vishnu. We find Vibhishan surrendering to Lord Ram. We find Hanuman surrendering to Lord Ram. We find there are so many incidents of Sharanagati, or surrender. It's the ultimate message of the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore it's Krishna's Charma Shloka, the last instruction. Sarva Dharman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Raja. So in all the consideration of dharma, the ultimate good thing that you can do with your life, the ultimate virtue, the ultimate thing that will bring you peace and happiness in life, is to surrender to God and just understand that everything is created by him, everything is ultimately dissolved by him, everything is maintained by him, everything is owned by him, including your body. So you might as well surrender your body to Krishna. Your mind is controlled and owned by Krishna, so you might as well surrender it to him. What will that make me? If I actually surrender to God in this way, will that not make me simply a robot? No, actually, it will make you a more vivacious person. It will make you a happier person. It will make you a more joyful person. It will make you more giving and loving. Why? Because when you surrender the tendency of the body to act in contradiction to God, and you understand that the soul is me and I am part of God, then you are being returned to your original position. And in one's original position, one is joyful. So although we have the theme of Dharma running through the Ramayana, they're also the sort of top level, the top notes. So one of my friends gave me a particular type of perfume. Well, he didn't give it to me, but he said, smell this very expensive type of perfume called Agar Wood perfume. He said, the first thing you get is the sort of bottom notes. He said, it smells like a farmyard. And he said, but if you persist, he said, the top notes you'll get is a beautiful fragrance. I said, how does that work? He said, because your nose has different receptors, and the base receptors are at the very opening to your nostrils, and the top receptors are in your back of your nasal cavity. And so the fragrance has to travel first over one and two and then three. So he said, you'll get three distinct perfumes. He said, that's why it's so expensive. So I smelled it, and yes, farmyard. Then there was something, something else. And then I got the sweet fragrance. So with Ramayana, you know, we first get the earthiness, and the earthiness is the Dharma, the do's and don'ts, the rules for life. And that's fine, but that's only the beginning of the fragrance of the Ramayana. Ultimately, the top notes of the Ramayana, the top fragrance of the Ramayana is Sharanagati. So let's have a verse. This is a nice verse. It goes like this. And it comes from Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is permanently meditating upon Rama. And he tells his wife, Rama Rameti Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranama Bistulyam Rama Nama Varanane. So he says to his wife, who is none other than Durga, who is in charge of the material world. See how it's working. You see, O Varanana, I chant the holy name of Rama, 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 and thus enjoy this beautiful sound. This holy name of Ramachandra is equal to 1,000 holy names of Lord Vishnu. Another verse. Namo Brahmanyadevaya. And devotees all think they know this one. This is how we eat, right? You don't say this, you don't eat. Namo Brahmanyadevaya. Ramaya kuntame dase. Caught you. Uttama shloka duryaya. Nyasta dandarpitangaye. O Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have accepted your devotees as your worshipable deity. Your knowledge and memory are never disturbed by anxiety. You are the chief of all famous persons within the world, and your lotus feet are worshipped by sages who are beyond the jurisdiction of punishment. O Lord Ramachandra, let us offer our respectful obeisances unto you. The devotees of Bhaktivedanta Man are very, very fortunate indeed. Because we have installed and worshipped and loved since 1981 the beautiful Ram Darbar of Sita Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, and beautiful Ram Sheila also. So our vision is Krishna, and Radha Gokula, and our vision is Sita Ram. And Many years ago, we produced somebody in England produced an album, and it was a story, and it was a when I say album, I mean a black vinyl album. This was in the 80s before CDs came in. So there was a famous singer who produced an album which was a story, and it was a musical story, and it proved very popular. So some of our devotees said, we could do that because we have the best story in the Ramayana. And so we took some of our Sangatan funding and we made an album. And devotees wrote the songs and wrote the script. And it was all in praise of Lord Ram's adventures. And it was called The Legend of the Great King Ram. We made thousands of them and we sold thousands of them all over the country. And it was very, very popular. How could it not be? The songs were very beautiful and they persisted up until today. The Bhaktivedanta players still use that, some of the songs in their productions. So we were very inspired to have Lord Rama with us. So out of all temples in the world, there are only a few, I think three, Washington and Bombay and Bhaktivedanta Manor, who have installed deities of Sitaram, Lakshman and Hanuman. So the story of the Ramayana begins at the beginning of all stories, where the suras, the demigods, go for protection to the ocean of milk, and they ask the Supreme Lord to please come and please help. And in any movie that I've ever seen, it's Pahi Mam, Pahi Mam, Pahi Mam, save us, save us, save us. And this is the beginning of the appearance of God in our life also. My dear God, please save me. I've reached the point where I cannot save myself. Even when a person is hopelessly addicted to alcohol or some other drugs, and he goes on this Alcoholics Anonymous course, he says, first thing is to acknowledge that you have fought and you have done as much as you can and now you can't do any more. That is a Sharanagati, a moment of Sharanagati. I cannot do this by myself. I cannot conquer this addiction by myself. I cannot see my way clear for the rest of my life by myself. I can't function by myself. Is it a moment of weakness? Actually, it's a moment of strength, because simultaneously, when you accept that you have weaknesses that can't be dealt with just by your own power, and that there is a higher power that you acknowledge, and you ask for help, simultaneous, that moment of internal weakness is the beginning of all of your strength. So everybody recognizes this. So why don't we do it? Why do we not do it? Why is it only partial? So the whole theme of Ramayana is partial surrender and total surrender. Some characters in the Ramayana, they exhibit partial surrender, and some exhibit total surrender. But in the beginning, we find the demigods going to the Lord. Now, Prabhupada has told us often enough that when the demigods go to the Lord, they do it really because they're pushed to do it because they want to protect themselves. That's all right. At least have some motivation. That motivation will get you off your chair and will get you to the ocean of milk. Why should we not all go to the ocean of milk? So the demigods prayed that the Lord would incarnate within the world to conquer the demons. And this also is echoed by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, that paritranaya sarunam vinashaya cha duskritam. I come, I protect the good people, I uplift them, and I make the demons very depressed. This is one of my businesses. I come to this world to do that. So the Lord said, Tatastu, I will come. I'll come. I accept that. Let it be. And the Lord doesn't always come immediately. He doesn't immediately jump up from an antashesha and immediately incarnate. So he said, I will come, and I will come along with many of you. I'll take my birth, and everything will be arranged. Now, So perfect is the Lord in his arrangement that when he comes to this planet, he not only comes himself, but of course he has a host of supporting characters. All the best actors and actresses, they take all the different roles. So this is the Ramayana, it's a dramatic staging of saving the earth from the demons, establishing Dharma, and provoking the inner movement of Sharanagati. So even in the very beginning, we find that, there was a king by the name of Dasharatha, and he had three wives. He had Kaushalya, Kaikeyi, and Sumitra. He had no children. He wanted children. And in these Dharma Shastras, we find that the way to achieve anything, whether it's the creation of the universe, the secret syllable is tapa. With the word tapa, you can create a universe. Because tapa, if heard and understood, will result in the creation of a universe. Tapa, just one word. So in the business of having children, tapa, there must be austerity. So this austerity is greatly helped if there's a great saint to help you perform austerity. To get the strength to perform tapa, we need the help of a great saint. So Dasharatha, in his anxiety, it's always anxiety for a king or a queen to create the next generation, because that's what being a king is all about. Without there being a king on the throne, then we will just have an artificial system where we vote, the citizens vote in a king and vote him out again after 4 years. This is in Vedic culture, this is not seen to be the best combination. Perhaps here in England we have a sort of halfway house. We have a king or a queen with no power or reduced power. We have a constitutional monarch. Some say that may be better than nothing. But to have nothing at the top, no person at the top, can sometimes mean that the will of the citizen is everything, which means that it causes citizens to think in a different way. It causes them to think in a non-dharmic way. So because the ultimate executive is the representative of God, it's good to have one. So in the old days, the kings and queens used to choose their princes to succeed them, also by the will of the citizens. They would understand who is the most popular prince, and then the king would choose that most popular prince to be the king after him. So it wasn't just in days of old, you know, the kings just foisted the sort of ugly, vice-ridden son on the citizens and saying, because he's my son, he will make a good king. It wasn't like that. The king would have many sons, and who was the most heroic, most popular with the people, he would choose that son. And the people would be happy, and they'd have a king that they could support. So it was a mixture of popular democracy and monarchy. So don't go thinking that, you know, you've either got to have one or the other. It's not like that. But Dasharatha's problem was that he had no son at all. So where was the tapa coming from? What it was, he had heard that there was a young man, a young sage, who was so pure that the moment he stepped foot in a kingdom, it would rain if the citizens required rain, and virtue would be established just by him being there. Think of that person. He was a little bit like our brahmacharis at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Just as our brahmacharis at Bhaktivedanta Manor have not seen the outside world for more than a year. So Rishi Ashringa was living in the forest, and he had not seen, there they all are, the brahmacharis at Bhaktivedanta Manor, Hare Krishna, Hare Bol. So Rishi Ashringa was living deep, deep in the forest. Due to some arrangement, he'd not even seen his mother. He'd not even seen a woman. And he was now a young man. So he not he so deep in the forest he was. So the king devised a plan. He said, "Well, let's dress up some beautiful young women as brahmacharis. Please do not try this at Bhaktivedanta Manor. It will not work." So he dressed up some beautiful young ladies as brahmacharis. And they went there to Rishi Asringa's place, which was in the next kingdom. You see, Dasharatha was being quite wily, because the next king over, he had Rishi Asringa. And in his kingdom, everything was wonderful and pious, and it rained on time. But Dasharatha's kingdom, you know, he could do with such a soul. But how to get him from one kingdom to the other? So they sent the girls dressed as brahmacharis. And when Rishi Asringa saw them, he thought to himself, "Well, these are very nice brahmacharis." He had some innate attraction to them, but he couldn't understand why. He said, "They must have some power over me." And they said, "Come with us to our ashram." And he said, "Where is your ashram?" He said, "Well, it's in the middle of the river." He said, "Well, I've lived here all my life." He said, "I've never seen an ashram in the middle of the river." And what Dasharatha's aides had done was to disguise several ships as an island. They'd planted trees and put an ashram there. He said, "Oh, how wonderful." So he got on board, and of course, they began reciting the Vedas, and he was studying with them. Meanwhile, the ship was going down the river. It was going down the river all the way to the capital city of the next kingdom, which is called Ayodhya. The kingdom was called Kosala. And Kosala also had, it also had Brahmins, but So Rishi Asringa came and they performed a fire sacrifice and gave some sweet rice to the three queens of the king, Dasharatha. And, he thought that he was, hedging his bets, I suppose. If you have three queens, you expect at least one of them becomes pregnant. But nothing happened until Tapasya came to his kingdom. So with Tapasya, his first queen, Kaushalya, gave birth to Rama, and Kaikeyi, who was the youngest queen. It is said in some places the youngest queen was Kaikeyi. And it was also said that Kaikeyi was kind of his favorite wife. She gave birth to Bharat. And then Sumitra gave birth to Lakshman and Shatrughna, who were twins. So they grow up, and of course they are the apples of everybody's eye. First, what is better than having a son? Well, what could be possibly better than having a son? Well, the only thing better than having a son is to not have a son and then have a son. So Dasharatha was very happy, 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 happy. Everything's happy. And then Dasharatha had to surrender. So here we find the element. Who did he have to surrender to? Well, a great sage, Vishvamitra, came when the boys were 16. And he said, I want Ram and Lakshman to come with me to conquer over some man-eating demons that we have in the forest. Well, that's quite a thing, isn't it? To have man-eating demons in your forest. Have you ever seen a man-eating demon? I pray that you do not ever meet a man-eating demon in a forest. But if you're a sage, then man-eating demons are actually a big problem. So he said, I need your boys to come with me. He said, but they're only 16. He said, what about the other boys? I also have two others, Ram and Lakshman. My favorite boys. So they're only 16. He said, well, they are kshatriyas. They know how to fight. We can't fight these man-eating demons. He said, but I have so many, I can give you a whole army. I have so many kshatriyas, so many archers can come and help you. He said, no, I want these two. And of course, a king cannot refuse. He certainly can't refuse someone like Vishvamitra. So Vishwamitra takes them, but he also trains them in archery, and he gives them weapons that are very, very powerful weapons. And the boys are successful, and they come back. This is a very short telling of the Ramayana. And it comes time for the boys to be married. And in a neighboring city, probably not the kingdom, it wasn't the kingdom where he got the Rishi Ashringa from. The kingdom was looked after by a king, Janaka. And Janaka was a very pious and noble king. He was said to be the personification of virtue. So important is Janaka that Krishna even mentions his glorious name in the Bhagavad Gita. So he must have been someone really special. So he's having a big party for his daughter. And at the end of the party, one of the young men who were invited to the party will be chosen as her husband. So what a party. But the young boys have to justify themselves by all manner of physical skills. Sita's going to choose which is the most handsome, the most noble looking, the most powerful, because Sita wants to marry a prince. She doesn't want to marry a flabby nobody. So one of the great tasks that the princes, and they all assemble there from all over India, one of the tasks is there's a great bow of Lord Shiva, and it is to be strung. And this bow was very, very big. In fact, hundreds of people had to bring it there on a trolley. It was a very big bow. So who can string such a big bow? So the different princes, they tried. And ultimately, Lord Ram not only strung it, but he broke it with a big crack, big cracking sound. And of course, Sita moved forward and she garlanded him. And Janaka Maharaj, King Janaka, was absolutely, he was, you know, it was wonderful. What could be more better than having a son? To have a son when you formerly did not have any children at all. What could be better than that is to have a son marry your daughter who's a prince. This is even better. So it was said that at that moment, Janaka's mind became like an ocean. And there were two swans swimming, not an ocean, a beautiful tranquil lake. And there was two swans swimming in that lake, and one was called Ram and one was called Lakshman. But they weren't bereft, because Sita married Rama, but of course Lakshman marries her sister Urmila, and then Janaka has a brother, and he's got also two daughters. So Bharat marries Mandavi, and Shatrughna marries Shrutakirti. Just so you don't think that Rama was, too favored. So the next block in our story, after there's a happy, beautiful wedding, and there's, a whole 3-hour movie just about Sita Swayambhar, whole 3 hours taken just to tell the story of the beautiful marriage of Rama and Sita. And all of them, all got married. So everything is perfect, and, Rama's the perfect son, the perfect brother, and everything's happy in the kingdom. And Dasharath then makes the choice that Rama will succeed him. It is why? Because it is time. He's not going to die. Kings and queens should not wait until they die before their sons or daughters take over as the next king or queen. Rather, they should use the last portion of their life to seek out moksha, or spiritual liberation, because this is the only path set out for a king. The path of becoming a sannyasi is not set out for a king. He has to seek moksha in a different way. Brahmins take sannyas. Kings, they go to the forest, or do they go to the Himalayas? It is a type of sannyas where they live bereft of their kingly position. So just imagine you go from velvet and gold spoons and the best gold plates to eat off and the best meals. You go from this to eating berries in the forest. So this is what Dasharath, this was his future, and he arranged for Ram to be crowned king. But as you know, and I'm telling you because I know that everybody listening knows this story, but we tell the story. You know, Srila Prabhupada once, he told us the story of Lord Nrsingadev. So there's no one who knew the story of Lord Nrsingadev more than Srila Prabhupada. And then he was in Vrindavan, and it was Nrsingadev's appearance day, and they were putting on a play for him. And in Vrindavan, there's pillars. So what do the actors do? They made an arrangement that Lord Nrsingadev would come out of, not out of the pillar, but out of some bamboo fencing that had been put around the pillar. Now, Prabhupada knew that story better than all of us. But at the moment when Lord Nrsingadev burst out of the pillar, Prabhupada goes like this, as if he's surprised, as if he's saying, I didn't know that was going to happen. Because when you enter into the story, you get surprised over and over again. Oh, my word. You mean Lord Vishnu comes out of a pillar? That's amazing. So it was like that when King Kulashekar Alwar was listening to the story of Lord Ramachandra many years later in medieval India. He got to the part where Sita was captured, which we're coming to in a little while. And he said, oh my gosh, he said, Sita's been captured. Quick, he said, call the army. He took us in a trance. He took the whole army to the ocean. You know, he was living in South India. He took the whole army to the ocean. And there are thousands and thousands of soldiers with their armor and their horses and spears and swords and shields. They assembled on the ocean. And Kulashekar just went, charge, let us go to Lanka. And he went into the water. And eventually the water was up to his neck and he had to return. The horse was floating away from him. So the ministers, they said, well, what are we going to do? We have to make sure that he never hears the Ramayana again. Or at least he never hears the bit where Sita's been captured. So every single Brahmin in the kingdom was told, don't mention Sita being captured. So then everything went well for a few years. But unfortunately, there was one young visiting Brahmin who was telling the story of the Ramayana, and he got to the bit where Sita was captured. And the king said, really? Really? Sita has been captured? He said, I didn't know that was going to happen. So again, he started getting his eye. And so the ministers had to take a third of the army, and they were waiting for him on the beach when he came. And the leader of the other army came forward and he said, my lord, he said, it is all right. He said, Sita has been reunited with Ram. He said, there is no need to worry. He said, oh, that's wonderful news. He turned to his army and he said, this is great news, isn't it, men? We don't have to have a battle. Let's go back and celebrate. So we tell these stories and you all know the end. I know the end. Everybody knows the end. But we tell them, we tell them again and again and again, because we get the emotions, and the emotions come to us as if we are hearing it for the first time. So, as you know, as you've heard many times, but as you hear it again, you may weep. You may freely weep, because this is the moment when Kaikeyi, The stepmother of Ram, the youngest wife of Dasharath, she goes to him one evening and she says, "My lord, many years ago on the battlefield, when you were suffering from your wounds and you were dying of thirst, do you remember that I came to you and I gave you water and tended to your needs?" He said, "Oh, yes." He said, "It is then that I knew that you would be a good wife, and you have not disappointed me." She said, "Well, do you remember at that time you made me two promises?" He said, "Yes, not one promise, but two promises I made." He said, "And do you remember that you've never given me those promises? I've never asked you for anything. I've always been happy." He says, "Yes." He says, you're my best wife. If you have three wives, always tell the one that you're with that she's your best wife. I don't know this from personal experience, but they tell me this is the way it goes. So always tell, you're the best wife. If you only have one wife, then you have to say, you're the best person I could have married, ever. I can't dream of ever being married to anyone else. This is this is called acceptable breaches of truth. So then he said, "Oh yes," he said, "you're my best wife." She said, "Well, tonight I would like to ask you to install my son, Bharat, as the king." He said, how can you ask me this? How can you ask me this? All the arrangements have been made. I can't do this." She said, "You promised." She said, "Let me tell you that when a Kshatriya makes a promise by his word is his bond. Your promise was witnessed by all the demigods. Your promise was witnessed by the Paramatma. Everyone heard that promise. You said it, you have to keep it now." And Dasharath was crestfallen. He said, "Well, how will we have a peaceful kingdom if Ram is in the kingdom?" And she said, "Now, my next promise, I want you to banish Ram for 14 years to the forest." Dasharath had a heart attack. He said, how is this even conceivable? How can you even ask such a thing?" So he said, "Well, I cannot ask him. You have to go. You wanted to have you go." So this is where we find even God himself following the principle of Sharanagati, total and absolute surrender to his father. Because for the son, his father is God. So he heard about this from Kaikeyi, his stepmother. His stepmother told him, I never want to see you again for 14 years you're going. 14 years, why 14 years? Because 14 years, according to Vedic culture, the punishment for murder was life sentence. And a life sentence means you don't go to a prison house, but you go to the forest. Because going to the forest, there'll be, at least you could save yourself. You could change. You might meet a sage. But it's just as likely as that you would meet a tiger or a lion. So it was sort of a death sentence, really, but 14 years was the statutory term. So some places say 14, some sages say 12. So you go. And he says to KK, he said, "I will gladly obey my father's command." And then he added, he said, "And even if you were to order me, I would agree to your order. I would do it. Even if you told me, even though not my mother, you're my stepmother. Even if my stepmother tells me that she wants me to go, even if my father did not, but just you told me, I would follow you." So of course, when Sita, Ram's newly married wife, discovers that he's going to the forest, she begs to accompany him, and Ram argues against it. He says, "Well, it's not a place for a woman." He says, you're a very delicate creature. I love you very much. I want to protect you. But you cannot come to the forest because there are crocodiles. There are tigers. There are meat-eating birds of prey." He said, you would not survive. And then Sita gives Ram an instruction. And she begins teaching him about the position of a wife. So Sita's instructions to Rama at this point are taken by all wives as instructions on how a wife should speak and act with her husband. Later on, Sita gets more instructions from, who is it, Ahalya. And these instructions are also included within a sort of, you know, the booklet of how to be a good wife. So she said, as shadow is to substance, so a wife is to a husband. Is not the wife's dharma to be at her husband's side? She said, there are thorns in the forest, and you also have delicate feet. Let me walk ahead of you so that I may smooth the path for your feet. So she pleaded with him, and of course, how could Ram refuse? So then Lakshman, he also wants to come. He says, well, Sita needs protecting. You need protecting. Let me come to the forest. And he makes his arguments. And then, of course, Bharat and Shatrughna are away, but every citizen, when they hear what's happened, they said, then what is Ayodhya without Ram? How can we live here without Ram? And so they say, we're all coming. And so they all begin following Ram. And eventually he gets to the edge of the forest and he said, look, this is no good. He says, if you all come with me to the forest, he said, then it's just like being in Ayodhya. There's no surrender. I've surrendered to my father's order. But if you all come with me and we preserve all our relationships, then it's not being in the forest, it's being in Ayodhya, because you are Ayodhya to me. So anyway, he goes and they return very crestfallen. And then Bharat comes back, Shatrughna comes back, and he goes to his mother and he says, you did what? You did what? He said, you asked for Ram to be banished on the evening of his coronation while I was out of town? He said, how could you do that? How could you do that? She said, well, I did it for you. He said, you did it for me. He said, but you're breaking my heart. He said, Ram is my brother. He said, how could you possibly do that? He said, I say this day, you are no longer my mother. And of course, Kaikeyi is just, oh, she's grief stricken. And she's lying on the floor in tears. And she said, but I did it for you. I did it for you. So sometimes even great queens can get it badly wrong. Even mothers can get it badly wrong. Because there was some envy in her. That this is not my son who's becoming, this is her son that's becoming. So there's no envy. So Bharat goes to the forest and he begs Rama to return. And of course, Ram says, no, he cannot do it. So then Bharat says, he reasons with him. He says, the oldest brother must rule. Please come back and claim your rightful place as a king. And then Ram refuses to go against his father's command. So eventually Bharat, very tearfully, he asks, well, at least give me your sandals. Give me your sandals and I shall place these sandals on the throne as your symbols, as symbols of your authority. I shall rule only as regent in your place. And each day I shall put my offerings at the feet of you, my Lord. When the 14 years of banishment are over, I shall joyously return the kingdom to you. Now, this whole episode of Ram's sandals, I mean, it's just, you know, people, they talk about, they can talk about Ram endlessly. But Ramanujacharya had a great disciple of a disciple's disciple many times. His name was Vedanta Deshika, and he was challenged to write something about Ram. And he wrote about not Ram's feet, but Ram's sandals. You see, Ram's feet, you could write many books about just the beauty of Ram's feet or the surrender which is to be attained at Ram's feet. But he wrote 1,000, in one night, he wrote 1,000 verses about Ram's sandals and about this Leela where the shoes of Lord Ram are blessed with the touch of the feet of Lord Ram. And the, you know, just so many beautiful verses are called the Vishnu. What's it called? It's the Paduka Sahasram. Paduka Sahasram, Ram's Padukas. 1,000 verses in praise of Ram's Padukas. Anyway, these Padukas were taken by Bharat, and he lived outside the city, and he was regent, but he, you know, he took the tapasya. He felt so grief-stricken that because of his mother's love for him, Ram had been put in this compromised position, that he said, well, I'm not taking the throne. And more than that, I can't, from now on, I can't live as a prince. And so he dressed himself in tree bark, and he ate a mixture of barley mixed with soaked barley grains soaked in cow urine. And his hair grew long and matted, and he lived like a hermit for 14 years. And then as he was leaving to begin this vow, Ram said to him, Ram was very impressed with his selflessness. He looked at Bharat and he said, there's not a tinge of envy in you. And he said, I see this in you. He said, I should have known that you would renounce gladly what most men work lifetimes to learn to give up. In other words, Dasarath, my father, has learned how to give up the kingdom after many, many years. You've given up the kingdom just like that. So, my dear Sankirtan Priya, how long do we have? Conveniently, I don't want to keep everybody for... Have we already gone over our time?
We have, but we are so absorbed in the in the amazing nectar that's coming through your lotus mouth. Honestly, it's just... I didn't even notice the time. It's like 9:02.
Okay, well, if I finish by 9:15...
That's fine.
9:15, okay. So the years pass. There's many stories and sub-stories, many versions of the Ramayana, many commentaries on the Ramayana in which the commentaries have become part of the Ramayana story. Sometimes it's difficult to tease it all apart. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us the Ramayana story in just a handful of verses. And of course, it was this Ramayana is very much known by King Parikshit. You know, he would not have been unknowledgeable of the Ramayana. People, it's understood that you know the Ramayana. So the years pass, and the journey of Ram and Sita and Lakshman take them to many different places, and they're staying in one place. And Ravana is the arch. You know, the sort of the nemesis character, the figure of the incarnation of misappropriation of the property of others. That's not to say that he wasn't real or that he's a narrative construct. Ravana is a real person, but he is the emblem of the rebellion against the authority of Godhead. Godhead means that God owns everything, and everything should therefore be used for his service. And the arch enemy of that is represented by Ravan. So who better to hear about the beauty of Sita and to want to possess her? And how did he hear about Sita? Because he had brothers Kara and Dushana. Kara and Dushana, have I got that right? Yeah, he was married to Mandodari. And Mandodari, see, this is the thing. Mandodari was so pious and such a great wife that we recite the name of Mandodari in every wedding ceremony. When we tie together the bride and the groom with a knot, we recite the name of great wives in history, so like Shiva and Durga and Ravana and Mandodari. So how is it possible that such an evil king has such a great wife? Well, it just so happens that he was evil and she was a great wife. And she loved him, and she was the complete surrendered wife to an evil lord. So her name is glorified through the ages at every wedding ceremony. Of course, usually people go, oh my gosh, Mandodari. And I said, well, you know, Mandodari, Ravana, they were a great couple. Unfortunately, he was, he had roving eyes. So his sister was also roving. She was a man-eating Rakshashi. And she was a shapeshifter. She could change her shape. And she was, should we say, she's not the prettiest girl. So she changed her form to be a beautiful maiden, just suitable for Ram and Lakshman. And you all know the story. She came into the forest clearing and she said, become my husband. And Ram said, well, I'm already married to Sita. You know, please accept this. My brother's unmarried. He can accept you. He wasn't unmarried, but his wife is not here. So she said, she became pretty frustrated. So she changed back into a form and she attacked and she was, her nose and ears were clipped, her breasts were clipped by Lakshman, and she was sent howling back to Lanka. When she went to Lanka, she told Ravan, actually, it must be said that Sita is the most beautiful creature and she's fit for you. So you must be careful how you approach her. So then Ravana had a cunning plan and he sent Maricha, who did not want to do this, but what are you going to do when Ravana asks you to do something? It was like the godfather or something. You know, you don't acquiesce to his demands and that's it. It's all over. So Maricha was also a shapeshifter. He took the form of a beautiful golden deer. Sita saw it off in the distance and she said, Ram, please capture it for me. Ram went off. And then Maricha could also, he was a good ventriloquist and he was a good impersonator. So as Ram had captured him, he was saying, in the voice of Ram, he was saying, Sita, Lakshman, help me, please come. And Sita turned to Lakshman and said, do you hear your brother crying for help? Why don't you go? He said, he said, I have to stay here and protect you. He said, is it because you want me as your wife? And Lakshman, at least in one version, Lakshman says, my dear lady, your words pierce my heart like arrows. How could you say such a thing? Because Lakshman, of course, it was said, had never looked at Sita in the face. And he would only stare at her ankle bracelets. Anyway, eventually he is pushed and pulled to go and help Ram in his need. And when they get there, of course, they find that it's a trick. Meanwhile, Ravana, he takes the form of a sannyasi. And all the way through Vedic literature, men who want to trick women, they dress as sannyasis. Men who want to steal something, they dress as sannyasis. Why? Because a sannyasi is a figure of charity. He's the recipient of charity. He's the person who's trustworthy. So Ravana comes, he's an old man. He's dressed in saffron. He says, Mother, please, give me something to eat. I'm a lonely sage in the forest. So as he does, he grabs her and he reveals who he really is and takes her to a chariot, it is said, pulled by mules, by pack horses. A mule is not good enough to be a horse, not bad enough to be called a donkey, but is a combination of both. Good for pulling things, but not very pretty to look at. So the mules were pulling him through the sky. He takes her to Lanka. I'm abbreviating the story. And Ram begins his journey. And it is this moment when Ram shows himself as the perfect husband who loves his wife. And he says, as long as the sun is in the sky, as long as the mountains exist, as long as the rivers flow, I will not give up my search for you, Sita. So then he goes to the... And on the way, he picks up the monkey warriors and the bear warriors, and they make it to the beach. And then Hanuman flies to Lanka just because they've looked everywhere else. A year has gone by. They've looked for Sita, beginning to give up hope. So they have a little indication because Sita dropped some jewelry, and the jewelry was found. And it is, if you draw a straight line between where they were living and the jewelry, you'll see that the chariot, the flying chariot, was going that way, and it's towards the southwest. So then he says, well, maybe Lanka. So Hanuman could fly, and he went to Lanka. And there he saw Sita had been placed in a grove of trees, Ashoka trees. And, you know, for the whole year, some days Ravana was speaking very sweetly to her. Ravana was speaking very strongly to her. So one day Ravana would come and he would say, please, you know, I love you. I can look after you. You're here now. You might as well. I will dress you very nicely. You'll get all the best food. My maidservants will look after you. Why reject me? Is it because I'm ugly? Is it because you don't find me attractive? And the next day he would come and he would say, if you don't marry me, this is the thing, that he could not take a woman by force. He could not, it was, if he physically took a woman by force, if he raped her, then he would die. So he didn't, he was cursed. He didn't want to die. So he had to cajole and persuade or threaten. So the next day he would come and he would say, if you don't take me as your husband, he said, I promise you that all my maidservants here will stick you in this pot, boil you, and as I'm a Rakshasa, I will eat you for breakfast. That's a promise. Don't think I won't do it. And Sita, to his persuasion, she said no. To his persistent, aggravated demands, his threats, she said no, no, no. So then Hanuman, he's sort of witness to this behavior. And he says, my lady, I've come from Lord Rama. She said, well, who are you? You're just a monkey. He said, no, I'm Hanuman. I'm a special monkey. She says, well, how do I know? You might just be one of the Rakshasas. You might be just one more ruse of Ravana to try to persuade me to become his wife. He says, no, my lady, look, I have a ring from Ram. Ram sent me here with this ring to show you that I'm a messenger. I'm a Duta. I'm a servant of Lord Rama. Rama Duta. Cue the song. Rama Duta Hanuman. Excuse me. Wasted youth. So then she says, well, you may be from Ram, and that's very nice, but please tell him, give him a message that he can come here and rescue me himself. He is a prince. Let him come and prove himself and rescue me. He said, but my lady, I'm here now. He has sent me to come and take you. Please jump on my back. She said, I'm a princess. I can't jump on a monkey's back. He said, it is not very becoming of a princess. So, of course, that scene ends and Sita is... she remains. But we then go to so Ravana's men, ultimately they capture Hanuman, and as the story goes, Ravana is he orders Hanuman's tail to be wrapped in cloth, soaked in oil, and set it on fire. But Hanuman escapes, and with the burning tail, he sets fire to different buildings at night in Lanka. So Lanka is burning. It's a big, you can see it for hundreds of miles around. The whole city is burning. Anyway, so then the great scene of the Ramayana that is on millions of homes millions of, lunch boxes of children in India, millions of wall paintings, millions of calendars, millions of movies, is Lord Ram making the bridge to Lanka. And what a wonderful thing, because we're just kind of now coming to the end of the 14 years and the great battle takes place. Lord Ram leads his troops over the bridge. There's a great battle. And, Ram dispatches not only Karandushana, but Indrajit, who's the son of Ravana, Meghnath, who's the son of Ravana, Kumbhakarna, who's the son or brother. But anyway, they're all dispatched, and finally gets to Ravana himself. And by this time, Ravana is fully manifesting his 10 heads. And it said that when he came towards Ram, although everybody knows that when you circumambulate a great personality for auspiciousness, you walk around the person with your right shoulder towards them. This is called pradakshina. However, Ravan came and he circumambulated Rama with his left shoulder towards him. This is called apradakshina. And this gives only inauspiciousness to the performer. So eventually, there are many stories, of course, stories within stories and curses and counter curses. But we could be here all day. But eventually, Ravana is killed in a secret spot by an arrow directly to his chest. And Sita is reunited with Ram, and they return to Ayodhya. And as they return to Ayodhya, the first person that Ram encounters is Bharat. And Bharat has been living in a hut outside the city for 14 years. Can you imagine the joy? Well, this moment of joy between Ram and Bharat is played out in countless towns across India by a play, a dramatic reenactment called Ram Bharat Milap, or Ram Bharat Milan. And it's very simple. You get 100,000 people. They line the streets for 2 miles, and you have one actor playing Rama and one actor playing Bharat, and they just walk. And one comes from one end of the street and the other comes the other end of the street, and they just walk towards each other. This is entertainment in India, folks. There's no script. There's no other actors. There's just these two boys, usually young boys, and they're walking. And if you've got your positioning right, you get to be right in the middle where they embrace. And of course, as they embrace, everybody goes wild. This is because everybody knows the story. So then they go, and Ram's entry into Ayodhya is lit up, because they have not lit up candles or diwa for a very long time. The path is lit up as he comes back in the evening. And this is then Diwali, or Deepawali, the row of lights. So this is where my story ends. The beautiful. So we celebrate two festivals, or three festivals. One is the appearance of Ram. One is the battle, the end of the battle, which is in North India, it's known as Dussehra. In the south of India, it's called Ram Vijay, or Ram's victory. And we celebrate 2 weeks later Deepawali, or Diwali. And this is our Vaishnava celebrations. And it was said that in Ayodhya was so blessed during Ram.